Adam. Okay, so this is the beginning. Here we go. Pardon the disruption, guys. This is part of the virtual summit. And we're going to start right off the bat with this first topic, and that is people are going fishing lately. Unfortunately, it's not the kind of fishing we're talking about. Adam, talk to me about this. Is this a, what do you see? Because we're going to talk about this today and during the webinar too. What are you seeing as the big issues with fishing? Or is there any of that happening?
Oh, it's happening all the time. What we're seeing in my district, a lot of people are getting those phishing emails where someone is using a principal's email. Well, they're using the name. But it's like, if you look at the details, it's always garbledinformation@gmail.com. But they are taking the principal's name and they'll send in, somebody will click on it. Even though we've added the little banner at the top saying it's coming from outside the system, please do not, you know, caution, they'll still click on it. And it's happening. Now, what we've tried to do now is do targeting phishing of our own people. And we're trying to catch people clicking on those links, because right now we're doing our open enrollment for healthcare here. Ooh. in our district. And so we're getting a lot of those phishing emails going out there. And unfortunately, people are clicking on them. And even, we're getting those emails even asking about fax stuff. It's like, I sent you a fax, click on it. It's like, yeah. Really? No one has sent you a fax in 10 years through your email, but this one time you want to see it and you want to click on it.
I was going to ask you, what's the best or worst phishing email you've seen? And I'd be curious if anyone in the chat would like to add this too. Because there's always the typical, I'm a prince that needs this money and holding. And here, if you give me this account, then I will send you 5 million, rubles or whatever. But then there's the ones like you're talking about that are very clever, that actually take, they've gone and done their research and they found what the name of the business office person is, and they've mimicked the email and then sent it in saying, quick, I need 3 Amazon gift cards for such and such. Can you just send them over to me and I'll reimburse you, kind of thing. And it's done quick and on your phone. You seen anything interesting out there?
Yeah, that's our biggest fear, is people. Someone said, well, it was from Macy's. It's like, how would Macy's know your work email? Did you put that on your application? No. Well, why do they have it? So, guys, think about it. The biggest thing is the education piece, because people can stop themselves. We can't stop you, but you can stop yourself.
That social part is a big part of it, which leads us to this next topic. And it's something that we've talked to lots of school leaders around, both on the podcast, but also in a series of webinars that we've had with Future Ready. And cyber insurance has been really interesting. It was a big hot topic. I remember pre-pandemic, there's a lot of schools that were investing in this, paying money toward it. But what I'm hearing more and more now is that the cyber insurance companies are actually the ones going, we can't do this anymore. It's like they are losing money on it. What are your thoughts around cyber insurance?
Well, it's one of those. It's just really funny because districts, initially when they got them, I don't know why they were doing this. They were posting it on their website. Hey, we have cyber insurance. It's like, no, don't do that. Now that they know you have insurance, they will attack you. And I know here now our school board association, they have a portion that has cyber insurance a part of it. But it's also all these criteria schools have to meet in order to get cyber insurance. For example, you have to have 2-factor authentication, not just for people with domain access, but for all users. So how many districts realistically are doing 2-factor authentication for all staff members? When we struggle just for people to remember their regular passwords, when they have those post-it notes, with their passwords on it, those are things that we're trying to, under their keyboard, those things. And so, yes, I mean, we are an insurance liability when you really think about it.
Just say no to
districts can't afford it.
Yeah, just say no to post-it notes, right? That is true. Yeah, there is. And I think Cynthia mentions in the chat, their 2 districts are starting to drop them now because it's too much. And I think, which is kind of queuing us up for what we're going to get into a little bit today, because phishing, of course, what we just talked about is one of the prime things. That's, I think 92% is what I've heard from the folks at FPF, who we're going to hear from later. 92% of all kind of hacks, so to speak, are coming from those phishing emails. So it's still the social part of it, or those sticky notes. So I think cyber insurance has thought, oh, this is an opportunity. And now they're seeing it. Nope, not an opportunity anymore. Speaking of those opportunities, I don't know if you have to do this at your district, but I remember, back in the day, I've been in a district for I don't know how many years, but there was a time when it was like you had to do your required training. You do your bloodborne pathogens, you had to go through that. And cybersecurity has started to kind of slowly creep its way into that prerequisite, that prior training before school starts. What are your thoughts? First of all, required training, good, bad. I mean, the word itself, when somebody says it, it's like, oh boy, here we go, time to go take a nap.
Oh yeah, and I can't speak for myself, but other people I've heard, they will play those videos and the background and do something else and then go back and answer those four questions because they're really easy. I don't do that personally, but I know other people that will do it.
Yeah, I may or may not have paid my own daughter to click through those videos at one point. I'll go ahead and admit that right now live. Yes, I may have paid my daughter to actually click next on the videos, but I mean, I think about this topic, I mean, we need to, how do we ensure that, and I guess this is, we're setting up our speakers for later on today, but how do we ensure that people are actually watching, listening, and interacting with it?
Yeah, it has to be some kind of thing where once you complete this, then you gain access to. Until we can kind of have that completed, then you get, then it's going to be one of those things where people just kind of breeze through it. And even with that, they still may breeze through that, because I still don't think the average person understands the importance of cybersecurity, safety, passwords, because it hasn't necessarily impacted every single person. At one point, these events were known as like resume builders, pink slip events, but now it's more common for area school districts, public entities to be hit. So now it's not necessarily a resume building event. It's one of those things where we learn from it and we kind of share information. So we have to take a more serious approach about this. And this has to be right up there where we're mandated reporters, because everybody has to go through that mandated reporter training as it pertains to taking care of students and bloodborne pathogen. This has to be just that serious from the superintendent principal level down.
That is right. And I think doing it just at the beginning is probably good, but you also want to embed it throughout the school year too as well. Okay, we're going to head to the rundown here, guys. We got a little bit of time left, so we're going to go 1 minute on each of these, Adam. Quick-hitting topics. Student help desks. I'm surprised at how many schools aren't doing this. Are you aware of schools that are starting to actually use students to help with the repairs, maintaining, turning things on and off, or installing printers, as one of our guests said earlier? What are your thoughts on this?
As a father of three kids, I'm all for child labor. I'm all like, hey, hand me that remote over there. So hey, if you can get the kids to do it, definitely go for it. But really, you look at it as those college and career building opportunities where students can learn these skills, and it can alleviate some stress from your technology department if they're doing some very simple repairs. I just wish that more vendors had the resources that you could disseminate to the students and take part of this.
I love it. Yeah, we actually had a kid who hacked our SIS, who told us he could hack it. And so we spun up a dummy server and had him actually hack it and do a report, an incident report on where our vulnerabilities were. And I thought, man, that could go so many different directions. It could have been we punish the kid or we employ him, because some of them, they can do some amazing things. Let's put that to good use, because you never know what's coming next, you know, and in their life. Did you see this? This was a couple of weeks ago. We got to witness this. 90-year-old William Shatner goes into space, and I'm just thinking more, I mean, it's cute and it's fun, but I'm also thinking now, like, what's this interesting to think about? Our kids today are going to now have access to this quick-hitting technology, that interesting rocket that goes into outer space there. What are your thoughts on just sending people to space in general? Would you want to go to space? Do we need to have Undisrupted in space?
You know what? Yes, we need Undisrupted in space. But my thing is, we're going so far into space. Next thing, we're going to go to Mars, which is great. But I want to see what we're going to do with that technology. How is it going to make its way into our everyday lives? Because if we can create this technology to get to space and back, like we would take regular airplane trips or eventually make it to Mars, how is this technology going to make it into our everyday lives and eventually into our classrooms to make our standard of living better? That's what I want to see. You know, Elon Musk, you know, help me out. Make my life easier.
He will if you tweet him. I'm sure he will. We were talking about this the other day, and actually talking about insurance was an interesting thing, because we used to have insurance for our devices for the longest time. We instead of doing self-insured. What is the idea? What is your thought on acceptable loss? First of all, what is acceptable loss in your mind? Because I think we have to start there.
See, we have to make sure, though, with any time you do any deployment of anything, we have to make sure that everyone understands that loss will occur. Whether, you know, you start your own business or whatever, there's going to be some form of loss. And I think it's one of those things that school boards, superintendents don't understand. that you will lose a percentage of your assets. You know, some will break. So my thing is find those numbers because, you know, it's going to be more loss at the middle school level than at your elementary and high school. So you have to budget for that, and you can't beat up your community trying to stalk everything down. I saw one district where they were showing up at students' houses with police officers to try to recoup equipment. That's not necessarily the message you want to send to your community, that you're going to show up at somebody's house with 5-0 to try to get their devices back. I mean, I get where you're going, but in this day and age, that's not okay. So we have to be mindful of our community, but then we also have to understand that some of our assets will not make it back. And if everyone understands that, we'll have some success.
Yep. There's always that idea of that. What is that percentage of acceptable loss? I also was talking the other day with a parent about modern technology, but also talking about economics. And this parent was telling me like, oh man, I just wish they would go back to like teaching kids how to write checks. And I started thinking, do we need to be teaching that? I do agree that we need balance and we need to figure out, like, especially with credit. I mean, if you've seen like the last couple of crashes we've had. But I mean, at what point do we start teaching kids also about cryptos and NFTs? I mean, is that something anybody's embedded in a modern curriculum? I don't have anything invested in these yet, but yet is the key word, but I'm sure I'll buy a Dogecoin one of these days.
Yeah, as long as it's NFTs and it's not the not safe for work.
That's a different SW, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this is one of those things that we need to be more aware of, because I saw a story the other day about somebody made up a squid coin for Squid Games and all these people like got it. And next thing you know, they lost all their money behind it because people were trying to find the next thing and hop on it. So we need to make sure that we're educating all of our stakeholders about this, because at some point these cryptocurrencies will be how we're handling business.
That's how they get you with the ransomware too, which we'll talk about. That's what they want you to pay out. Did you see this the other day? Your boy Zuckerberg, he's at it again. He changed the title now. Now we got Google's Alphabet, Facebook is Meta. And then you've got this other thing called the Metaverse, which I was just reading on. That's like all these companies are putting in NVIDIA, which does like the graphics cards, and Microsoft. And they're creating basically the Ready Player One world. So thoughts on, first of all, Facebook being Meta or the Metaverse?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's interesting and scary at the same time, because I saw this commercial and I think it was like the Oculus, and it's these guys in the apartment right next to each other and they're playing against each other in this game. And it's like, I so thought Ready Player One. It's like, okay, you're right next to each other, but instead of seeing each other and actually playing a game together, you're playing through this game in the wall. So it's really crazy. And I can see this metaverse becoming how teaching and learning happens. Because I think about our virtual learning was the worst it was ever going to be when we did it. It's only going to get better. So imagine a fully immersive learning experience, or imagine being able to immersively go in there and fix your network. You know, you're actually in there, like finding where the flaws are and fixing it on like it just blows my mind to think about where we could go. I know.
You get way too excited about that part of it. But yes. I love some of the chat comments going old school there on the immersive technologies there as well. Adam, you and I both in the last week were lucky enough to actually go to in-person events. I mean, I know we're doing this virtually. We've done a lot of these virtually. How did it go? I mean, I got excited. It's funny. I'm like, oh, I'm such a modern. I feel like we need to stay. This is great. We can do all this tech. And I do think it's great. But there's something different that happens at those in-person events. What did you feel like? Or how did you feel after your event?
Oh, it was so good. It was actually yesterday. I was in Wisconsin. And I did get some cheese curds, the squeaky kind. But it was so amazing having that connection to people and the breakouts. You learn so much for those conversations where people are talking. Yes, these are great. And I know everybody's participating in the chat. But when you have those, hey, I have this issue. What are you doing in your district? How are you handling that? Or you're just walking by and you eavesdrop on a conversation like, hey, oh, I use that product. Oh, what are you? Those are where the money meets the road when you have these face-to-face in-person conferences. So I'm happy things are back. And so people, please do your part so we can keep these things.
Right. I think it's a yes and both. I think we continue to have the interactive virtual, but we also have the ability to do some of that, the back channel that happens in real person in those hallway conversations. I think it's so important. It's hard to mimic online. Speaking of back to normal, I don't know. I mean, this is a tricky one. With the pendulum swing of the pandemic, I think the natural gut response when teachers got back into classrooms was like, let's throw the technology back into the closet and go back to paper. And I think I'm hearing some trends of that. But I hate to lose everything that we gained. What are you seeing? What are you hearing about this in terms of teachers wanting to put the technology in the closets?
Yeah, it's one of those things where people are getting concerned about screen time, and they're seeing kids spending more and more time on devices. And so they're like, oh, we need to go back to basics because of the learning loss, which Uh-oh. Is one of those things that we have to figure out that balance between virtual and digital and on paper. You have to find out where those gaps are for those students and have meaningful tasks while they are on those devices. So, and you've been a big proponent of this, more and more creating versus drill and kill on technology, because you can't do that on paper. You can't do all that creation that you can do on a lot of these various devices that we have. So we need to do more training on that, and hopefully that'll keep us from going all paper and copying rote notes.
Yeah, just like we just said in the previous discussion, I think you can have yes and both. I think there's the virtual, there's a place called blended for a reason. It's not all of the same. There's a big push right now. You and I had talked to Doug Roberts from IEI recently, and he talked about the absolute fleeing of superintendents from the space. And there's a real shortage across the country, not just superintendents. I'm hearing all sorts of leadership positions and teachers, of course, leaving the space. So superintendents in specific, we were talking about this the other day. It's like, you know, who was that guy that was on the Seinfeld the soup Nazi. Like, I feel like every time a school board starts getting out of line, he should pop out of a closet and go, no soup for you 1 year, you know, and then see how they do without that leadership. Any thoughts on this? Or do you want to make an announcement right now, Adam, that you're going to be the next superintendent?
I would like to announce that I am not. I don't want those problems. But here's the thing. I think we are losing some very talented and gifted people in this profession right now, because you do have a lot of people who are bombarding these superintendents with all kinds of things all over the place. But we also are having an exodus of some superintendents, unfortunately, that do need to leave because they are not capable of handling where things are going now. So we do need to get some people in here who are more future ready. And they're bringing these ideas to these schools to move them forward.
Yes, we don't want to go back to normal. We want to go forward to different. So speaking of forward to different, guys, this is it. We are at the end. I'm excited. We are about to get started on our next go around. I'm excited to hear a lot. Adam, I got to see some sneak previews with these guys, so you haven't got to see some of the things that they're about to share, but there's some amazing, amazing data. So we're going to queue up the presenters in just a second here, but we want to thank you guys for being a part of the disruption. And hopefully you're staying undisrupted as well in your school districts as I switch back over to my other slides. Here we go. And back to my regular camera. Adam, thank you for joining me on the other
camera. Back to the regularly scheduled program.
We now return you to your regularly scheduled program already in progress.